this ladder?
They just came on now. Let's try get closer to the stage. Sorry. Excuse me. Can I just get by you there? Thanks a million.
Do you want to go on my shoulders?
What?
Sorry. Do you want to go on my shoulders?
Yeah, that'd be unreal. Thanks.
Wow. 3 celebrates connections made by music this summer. Find out more at 3.ie/music.
The following podcast has been rated R because we say fuck a lot.
What's the big deal? It doesn't hurt anybody. Fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck, fuck.
Parental guidance is suggested.
Hi, this is Uwe Boll. If you want to help support the podcast on this network, go to rogueintel.com. Thank you and go fuck yourself.
TableReadsPodcast.com.
Lights, camera, action.
When a script is written that is so bad that no one will film it, two men will bring it to life just so they can mock it. This is Table Reads.
So the movie's kaput, which means your script ain't worth the buffalo shit on a nickel.
Table Reads.
Table Reads.
With Sean McBee and Trevor Thompson.
With special guest, Kelly Levier.
Hello. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Kelly.
Yes, we should.
Let's
welcome Kelly.
Kelly said that was very loud.
It was very loud. That's true.
So we didn't post a podcast last week.
Yeah, I blame myself.
I blame Obama.
Yeah, why?
I just feel like it's been a while since anyone was able to blame him for stuff. Yeah. So, you know, let's throw that out there.
You're nostalgic for people blaming Obama for absolutely.
I'm the nostalgic for anything prior to January 20th, 2017. I'm not going to lie. But we had a scheduling conflict. We couldn't all get here and do other stuff that was needed in our lives. So we skipped that week, and I posted on Facebook that everyone should just watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit in preparation for our continuing this. So hopefully they've done that, and now they'll appreciate this even more. Or hate this more?
Reply to that message?
What'd you say, Kelly?
I should turn. Did anyone reply to that message?
No. I've had very little interaction from people on the Facebooks.
I have
and the Twitters.
I have a positive interaction on Facebook about this, but I'm going to save it for a very crucial point, which will be the end of the script. So I don't know if it's this episode or next, but there's some good news.
Oh, well, good. So let's... before we get started, I just wanted to give a shout out to the guys over at rogueintel.com, the podcast network that houses us, because they love us for some reason. I don't know. I still don't know why.
I think that they love you and Jimmy, and they're all
they,
right.
They tolerate you, yeah, grudgingly. That's true. That's,
and they love
Kelly.
They love Kelly.
They definitely love Kelly.
They and nobody else remembers Mark. So, you know.
Mark?
Exactly. His last name is actually spelled with a question mark.
I don't know who you're talking about.
His name, what's his last, whatever his last name is, like Johnson, it's not Mark Johnson's, it's Mark Johnson. He's a question mark.
Who is Mark?
Whatever the fucking guy was that was here once.
Oh, Danny?
I thought his name was Mark. He looked like a Mark. It's Mark.
It's Danny. It was Danny.
Danny, Mark, Jake.
But that does reinforce your point that no one remembers him. You don't even remember his name.
No.
So go check out rogueintel.com. Listen to some of the other podcasts over there. There's a new one called Fadtabulous.
Yeah.
And it's about fads of the past, when fads, you know, can be viewed as fads and not, you know, like the hot new thing.
You know what is a fad?
Otherwise known as a trend.
Yeah. You know what is a really big fad, though? The name Mark. I think Danny should consider changing his name.
So let's find out what happened.
Previously on Table Reads.
Table Reads. Fuck.
So on his 18th birthday, young Roger Rabbit learned that he was a rabbit.
And I'm a man now.
And a toon, and adopted. So he promptly set off.
That's okay for Roger.
Yeah.
He promptly set off to find his birth mother and his roots, making a new friend very promptly upon setting out on his journey. Richie, who he traveled to Los Angeles and Hollywood with. They're now roommates. They've gotten into some shenanigans. Roger has met and pretty much already fallen in love with the woman who will be known as Jessica Rabbit. Richie is dating Jessica's girlfriend. And while Roger has yet to get into show business, we know that'll come at some point. Richie, however, has just landed his first role, a one-line role in something where he plays a scared guy. And as we left off, he was walking into the studio for his first day as an act, as a professional actor. And it happened to be on a fateful day of December 7th, 1941.
Fade in.
Exterior, Hollywood Street, day. A crowded sidewalk in front of a greasy spoon. A sign on the window reads, Mom's Coffee Shop.
Oh, Jesus. We're reading ahead.
I'm not reading ahead. My brain is reading ahead.
Okay.
I think I know where this is going already.
Okay.
A sign, Mom's Coffee Shop. After a beat, the door opens and Roger, holding his photograph, is thrown out by a huge tattooed cook wearing a greasy apron over his t-shirt.
I just wanted to know who Mom was.
I'm Mom.
He slams the door. Roger sighs, carefully picks up his picture, and sits on the curb, depressed. I love it.
Yeah.
He saw Mom's Coffee Shop and just thought,
"Name Mom.
I found her!
Mom's in there!"
I love that some cartoon, they understand that some cartoon humor is just literal.
Yeah. Roger's POV, a truck parked across the street. Its trailer is high enough so we can see the bottom halves of the people walking behind it. We see a large pair of toon rabbit feet and a polka dot dress moving with the crowd. Roger reacts, looks at his photograph. It's the same dress. He looks back up at the feet, waiting for them to clear the truck. Angle, across the there is no dialogue for like a million years.
Oh no.
Holy shit.
Well no, they're like the rest of the page. There's dialogue.
Yeah, that's a lot of fucking direction. Hold on a second. I got to get a drink of this.
Sean's got to lube up first. Hold on. There we go.
Angle, across the street. The side of the truck reads, Buena Vista Room Partitions. Mm-hmm. We divide and conquer. A couple of delivery Christ. Guys emerge from the back of the open truck and carry a large room divider down the sidewalk, continuing to conceal the top half of the pedestrian.
Jesus Christ.
Angle, Roger, who dashes across the street, skirting a number of cars. The angry drivers ad-lib, goddamn tune, and
go back to Toontown.
Roger,
not in my neighborhood.
Roger looks down the block. We see a pair of rabbit ears in the distance, sticking up in the middle of a sea of people making their way down the sidewalk. Exterior, street, day. As Roger struggles to catch up, a large part of the crowd, with the ears in its midst, turns a corner. Roger dodges his way in and out of the traffic, trying to get closer. Exterior, bus stop, day. Roger tears around the corner just in time to see the crowd he was following alighting onto a bus. Not a red car? He catches up, only to have it drive away, leaving Roger wheezing in its exhaust fumes. Undaunted, he runs after it as it rumbles down the block. Interior, soundstage, day. Dozens of technicians, grips, etc. Those are all the crew positions I know.
Yeah. I'm a writer. I'm never on set. I don't know.
Are preparing for Richie's scene. The prison set comprises a corridor and several jail cells. At the end of the corridor, there is a small room with an electric chair. Richie sits on the bottom of a bunk bed, in prison garb, getting a final touch-up from the makeup woman and the director, a middle-aged, harried type, hovers over him. As the director, a middle-aged, harried type, hovers over him. You be the director.
All right. You're sitting on the bed, and Father Feeney walks by. He says,
How's it going, kid?
You say your line, and remember, it's death row. You scared?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's do this!
The director crosses back towards his chair, then reacts as a phalanx of smartly dressed studio executives approaches, headed by Mr. Greenblatt, an imposing-looking man in his 50s.
Mr. Greenblatt, what an unexpected pleasure!
Who's that guy?
That's you, dollface.
Makeup woman. Kelly.
You guys are glitching.
Ah, criminy.
Oh, no.
Criminy.
Sorry. Hold on.
You're not glitching, though.
Yeah,
so
you sound fine.
That's my cute
the
face.
The head of the studio. That's what happens when you're 2 weeks behind schedule.
Richie reacts. This is his big chance, and he knows it. You know what? Let me turn off our camera. Maybe that will keep us from glitching.
Yeah, she doesn't need to see us.
She would prefer not to, I'm sure. I mean,
yeah, the luxury of not having to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat.
Oh, believe me. There's definite beating going on here.
Knowing, like, doing this remotely and knowing that she isn't here is, like, the whole purpose of doing this, I think. It's, you know, it's different when you're out living your life and you're not here, but when, like, you are actually, like, participating in something and actively not there, I'm sure she loves that.
I'd like to outlive my life.
Yeah, what's that like?
You said outliving your life. I was like, how do you outlive your life? I'll be here all week, folks.
You got to run real fast.
Well, I can't do it then. Even Superman, you know.
Okay. Exterior, Paramount Studios gate, day. The bus pulls up in front, letting off the bulk of its passengers. Roger runs around the corner at the end of the block, sees the dozens of people filing through the gate. He runs after them, passing the guard, who's busy giving directions to a delivery truck. Angle, favoring bus. Roger runs through the gate as the bus starts moving. As it pulls away, we see the pair of ears appear in the back window. Exterior, Paramount lot, day. Cars, trucks, carts, and people are going in every direction. Roger runs up to the commissary entrance, looking everywhere for the ears. He turns around, spots a wardrobe cart. Making its way toward a soundstage in the distance, whoever's pushing the cart is hidden on the other side of the prison costumes that hang on it, but suddenly we see a glimpse of a blue and yellow polka dot dress fluttering in the breeze.
I know who that is.
The cart moves through the large side door of the stage, and Roger bolts in after it, just as the huge door slides closed. Interior, soundstage, day. Richie closes his eyes, takes a breath, excited, expectant. We hear a buzzer, and the assistant director starts barking orders. I'm going to be the assistant.
Quiet on that set. We're rolling. We are rolling. No walking, no talking.
Angle, corner of stage. Where we... You know, I miss the whole quiet on the set thing.
Yeah.
On a real movie set, all you get is... Kring!
Yeah.
And then after the scene, you get...
The other thing that doesn't ever happen is action and cut.
I mean, the director does say those, but they don't get shouted.
Yeah, it's like, all right, action. But no one ever goes, lights, can't, like in the beginning of the show. No one ever does that.
Well, because when you're setting up a movie set, when you say lights, 3 hours later, the lights are done.
Exactly. It's not like the lights are just sitting there powered down, you know. All right, this better get happy because the music just went really. Oh my God, you just spit all over me.
Sorry,
Jesus.
Some tea went down.
It's
the wrong
a hell of a fucking, you know, mood changer. That music, you coughed up on me.
Richie closes his eyes, takes a breath, excited, expectantly. Oh, buzzer! Yeah, already read that. Okay, come on. Angle, corner of stage, where we find Roger.
You come on to yourself.
Where we find Roger, who looks around, craning his neck, finally spotting the wardrobe cart near the set. He catches another glimpse of the dress, starts running for it.
Mark! Speed!
Action!
And the scene begins. Extras move up and down the prison corridor. An actor, playing Father Feeney, stops at different cells, greets other characters.
Hey, Spike! Hiya, Mick.
He passes Richie's cell and turns to him.
I was fully expecting Mr. Feeny from, like, Boy Meets World, and you went to Irish.
Where are you going, Mr. Matthews?
Mrs. Matthews? Mr. Matthews? Blah. Blah, 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 blah.
The one time we actually laughed at that show, yeah. I think it was.
He passes Richie's cell and turns to him. How's it going, kid? Richie looks up, takes in a breath, to speak, just as Roger races up to the cart and, filled with jubilation, pulls the costumes that hang on it apart.
Mother!
The costumes separate to reveal who's wearing the dress. An older wardrobe woman, quite human, and scared out of her wits.
Eek.
This is why we have Kelly for these hard-hitting lines.
We couldn't have done it. There's no way we could have done that. She's very tired. I'm sorry. Can you do the eek again so I can do Roger right after it?
I mean, I can't really be loud. My roommate.
No. I'm just saying do the eek again.
You can do it the same way.
Just do it the same way.
Eek.
Eek.
Richie is frozen with the line right on the edge of his tongue. Roger panics. Oh my God, look at this giant chunk of...
For an animated movie, it's very wordy.
Roger panics, turns on his heels and starts running, tripping on a cable and landing on a camera dolly, which zips him right into the middle of the set. He grabs the boom mic. The boom man reacts and tries to pull it out of the way. Only Roger clings to it, and it sails around in a full circle. People duck out of the way as Roger lets go and crashes headfirst into a set of prison bars. He thrashes around, but his head is wedged, and in trying to get free, he rips a whole set of the metal bars out of the wall and starts backpedaling out of control. He runs into two light poles and drops onto the electric chair. One spotlight falls on his head, the other falls onto the bar, sending sparks flying and shocking Roger, who quivers and smokes from the jolt, still sitting on the chair. The shock catches the rear of his pants on fire, and he flies about 20 feet off the ground, then hits the ground running again. The light still on his head, and the tail of his overalls in flames. The studio executives and the director follow all of this, and the cameraman shoots all of this. They crane their heads as Roger, his head covered and trailing black smoke, runs up one wall of the huge soundstage, runs halfway across the ceiling on a catwalk, collides with a technician, bounces off of him, gets tangled in some cables, falls and proceeds to swing the length of the stage, letting out a panicked Tarzan-type yelp. On the upward swing, he smashes into the ceiling again and now falls straight down, landing with an off-screen crash directly onto the jail set, where, on the cut, we find his feet sticking up and out of the twisted cot and mattress that he landed on directly across from Richie's. Richie sits, still frozen, as if he was still about to deliver his line. Everyone else just stands there, dumbstruck. Finally, Greenblatt turns to one of his minions.
He should have just written, like, Roger does a Tex Avery moment with everything in the room.
Greenblatt turns to one of his minions.
Does Disney know about this guy?
His aide shrugs.
If not, we just found ourselves a star. Sign him up.
Another angle. The director crosses to the jail cell, leans over Roger's feet.
Congratulations. Go over to Building 1 for your contract.
Turns to crew.
Okay, that's a wrap here. Let's move to the Let's move to the cell riot scene in the back lot.
A wrap? What do you mean a wrap? I didn't even say my...
Sorry, kid. The set's a wreck. We'll probably cut the scene anyway. Maybe next time. Funny guy. Should be a big star.
The director walks away. Richie turns to Roger, who has managed to extricate his head from what's left of the metal cot.
Richie! So, how'd it go?
Can you draw out the go? Say it one more time and draw out the go, because I know you can nail
this.
So, how'd it go?
Okay. Okay, give me a pop sound when it pulls his head out of there.
Richie! So, how'd it go?
That's Roger. Exterior soundstage day. The door is pushed open and Roger bursts out with a crazed Richie right on his tail.
But I thought I saw my mother!
Dead! I want you dead!
Can we discuss this like two human beings?
Yeah, after I kill you! You know,
I'm liking the script, man.
I feel like Richie would have said, like, you're not a human being. You're just a dirty, low-down, rotten, tune, you yeah. fucking ink smudge.
Yeah.
Because Richie kind of is a little bit of a racist.
He is, yeah, yeah. And that was definitely always a theme with Roger Rabbit, you know, was racism. I mean, the Ink and Paint Club, you know.
Tune Review, Strictly Humans Only. It's a Jim Crow Club.
It absolutely is. And it's, I don't...
No, I'm sorry, it's a Heckle and Jekyll Club.
I was going to say, they actually were, they didn't do it, but before the penguins were the waiters, they actually were going to have crow waiters.
Brilliant. Exterior movie set, day. A Western gunfight is being filmed. Cowboys and Indians are shooting at each other at a covered wagon roundup as Roger races by with Richie in pursuit, prompting looks from technicians and actors. Interior, studio commissary, day.
By the way, I want to say that I think this is the episode people are going to remember where Kelly, they're just like, she really shines in this one.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Kelly.
Yeah, this is my big debut.
Thank God it's not.
As Roger pulls open the door and runs in, Richie follows him into the dining area, where Roger arrives at a large round table. Richie stops at the other end. You tune son of a bitch! I'm gonna turn you inside out!
I can do that for you!
Roger moves a bit to his right, then his left, and Richie does too. They continue maneuvering for a few beats.
Would you stand still, for Christ's sakes? But Richie, I didn't mean to wreck your career! I swear it!
I don't care. I want you.
Ooh. I mean, exactly how do you mean that? Richie, listen to me. I just want to say one thing, and then you can do whatever you want.
Richie gives him a look, then calms down a little. Okay, what?
When I'm a big star, I'll get you your line back.
Without missing a beat, Richie leaps across the table, grabbing Roger by the throat. The table collapses, and the two of them end up on the ground. Richie pins Roger beneath him and begins to strangle him, whacking his head on the floor.
No, stop it! Stop it, Richie! You're killing me!
Keeps choking him. Really?
No, but you seem to be enjoying yourself.
Oh, Richie, I'm sorry, let me do it again. It's his regular voice.
Oh, yeah. Really?
No, but you seem to really be enjoying yourself.
Richie stops, exasperated. You mean to tell me you could have taken your hands out of those cuffs at any time?
No, not at any time. Only when it was funny.
Richie stops, exasperated. Great. I'm trying to kick the crap out of a tune.
Yeah, why don't you save it for the Japs?
Okay, so that was a random waiter saying that, and
that wasn't just me saying that.
And I'm guessing that's because he has seen the news, and Richie's going to be confused because he doesn't know what's happening in the world on this particular day.
A day that'll live in infamy.
Richie reacts, looks around, and realizes that the tables are deserted. There are unfinished meals, cigarettes still burning in ashtrays. Over in the corner, we see a large group of people crowded around a radio speaker on the wall. Another angle, as Richie and Roger cross over to the corner. The mood is grim, and what they hear explains why.
All right.
Remember, 1940s radio guy.
Initial reports place the aisle... I'm sorry. Initial reports place the size of the first wave of Japanese bombers at 300 planes, the second wave 150. Casualty reports from Pearl Harbor are sporadic. However, from the reports of widespread destruction, no one here appears optimistic.
A young guy, about Richie's age...
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah, turns to him as the report continues.
I'm old, Kelly. I'm from that time.
That's true. You are archaic.
Turns to him as the report continues. Guess we're in it now, aren't we?
She tried to say, are archaic.
Exterior, studio commissary, day. People start filing out the door. Richie walks toward the front gate with a few guys who are about his age, and Roger, who tags along behind him.
So, how about it? We gonna sign up, ship out? If we go to boot camp, I take a 17 triple E.
Richie stops, turns to him, speaks quietly. I'm going back to the apartment to pack my things. After that, I don't ever want to see you again. Richie continues walking, leaving Roger standing alone. Interior, Mutual Radio Studios, day. A news announcer sits in a booth, reading wire copy as we see people filing up and down the corridor through the glass behind him. After a beat, Jessica and Wendy pass.
Tomorrow, 9 a.m. Same voice.
Yeah, dude, okay. They all sound the same.
Yeah, that's true.
They're all the same guy. There was only one news announcer in the 1940s.
The transatlantic accent. All right. Tomorrow at 9 a.m., the president will address a joint session of Congress. Meanwhile, draft boards from coast to coast report a deluge of enlistees. I should strangle the guy that maybe say deluge of enlistees.
Interior, Otto's office, day. Otto is sitting at his desk.
Who's Otto again?
Talking on the phone as Jessica Knox Nenners.
Wendy, Otto von Bismarck.
What? Otto.
What'd you say, Kyle?
You know your German autocrats? Otto von Bismarck?
Okay.
I don't think I understand you.
But who was Otto before?
Probably you. I mean, saw an Otto in the script, who do you think we're going to assign it to?
Kelly, obviously.
Otto is the roundest name I've ever heard.
it's an O on either end. And what's in the middle? TT. So, you know.
Yeah, so I guess the round guy with the titties has to play that role.
With the TTs. All right. I don't remember. Did I do him before? Who gives a shit? No one's listening. All right. Yeah, the station's going to help organize.
No, do it German. Oh. I like Kelly's idea.
Yeah, the station's going to help organize the blood drive. And there will be...
Oh, wait. Maybe it's bad for the start of World War II for him to...
Yeah.
German.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a very bad shame. What's happened?
You know what? Maybe he's from Trinidad. He's
just read something.
Yeah. All right. I'll do him English. Station's gonna help organize a blood drive, scrap metal drive, and any other kind of drive to drive. Say drive again, fucker. Jesus. To drive these two-bit gangsters back under Mount Fuji. Oh, glad you're here, girls. Let me get back to you. Hangs up. You know, this stinking war...
You went through, like, four accents in the case of those, like, three lines.
Yeah. Well, you didn't notice the Canadian one, did you? Because I only did one word in Canadian.
You never noticed that Trevor sucked, did you?
You never... You know the stinking war, Sean? It changes everything. It's not just the Japs. We're gonna lock horns with the Krauts, too.
See, it's a good thing we didn't read him as German.
Yeah, right.
Because then he's like, forgetting to lock horns with those Krauts. I fucking hate the Krauts.
Have you read my book, Jessica?
You didn't. Oh, did you go to the Lockhorns?
I did all that stuff.
Oh, I know. We've been listening all morning, Mr. Green. I just want you to know we'll do anything we can for the war effort.
Anything.
I could scream some more.
They both give Wendy a look. She shakes her head, wishes she could jump out the window.
Glad to hear it, Toots. By the way, don't bother packing. We're taking care of it.
Jessica and Wendy exchange looks.
Excuse me?
See, the way I look at it, girls, we're in for one hell of a tussle. It's going to be rough going at first, but it's going to be rough going at first. But I know if everyone just pulls together and with a little help from the guy upstairs, we'll win this thing.
During this, Otto proceeds to reach up and slide what we now realize is a hairpiece off his head. As he does, he slips into a German accent and takes a Luger from his desk drawer.
And grind our enemies into the face of the earth!
Exterior, broadcast center, day. Jessica and Otto, who's wearing his hairpiece again, emerge from the building and walk into a dark sedan parked on the curb. Roger appears from around the corner, calls out to her.
Jessica!
He starts running toward her. She turns to him, pauses a beat, then continues for the car as Roger gets closer.
Jesse, it's me!
Get in the car, doll.
Roger gets there as Otto slams... I don't know what is happening right now.
Well, he doesn't want...
Is he German?
No, but... No, not really. I think this is all a ruse. I think we're meeting our Judge Doom-type character. Our character that isn't, like, what he says he is.
I mean, basically what I'm getting at is the bad guy of this Roger Rabbit prequel a Nazi? Is Roger going to fight a Nazi?
Roger never fights anybody. Roger befriends...
You know what I mean? You know,
Richie's going to fight him.
Is the conflict going to be with a Nazi? Because that's weird.
That's great, actually. Kind of is more of an homage to the cartoons than you really think.
Roger gets there as Otto slams the door on the sedan, pulls out, running over Roger's feet. The car speeds off down the block and Roger starts running after it. Exterior, sedan, day, moving. We see Jessica through the rear window as she slowly turns around. Jessica's POV, Roger. running after the car in the middle of the street, calling out her name, then fading into the distance. Pathé newswheel, newswheel,
yeah,
newsreel, black and white footage.
Your reporter, Elmer Fudd.
We hear the classic energetic voice of a newsreel announcer.
I actually have the Pathé newsreel. I wish I'd known that because I could have played it here. Oh, well.
We're on the move in Europe.
We see a montage of battle footage from World War II, featuring artillery units shelling and infantry units engaged in ground combat as the announcer continues.
18 months after declaring war on the Axis machine, the Allies have a firm foothold on the occupied continent. The fighting rages on for weeks in the Italian seaport of Naples, where U.S. and British troops weather some of the fiercest battles of the war. Now, the drive northward begins. Here's a couple of our boys showing the Germans what for. Howitzer style. Let them have it, guys.
We see a shot of President Roosevelt waving to reporters.
While FDR prepares for his upcoming powwow with world leaders in Malta. Across the Potomac, the Army tests one of its latest weapons at a remote field in Quantico, Virginia.
And now a shot of several high-ranking military officers standing next to an arsenal of cannons, guns, bazookas, and mortars, all manned by soldiers in full combat gear. Then the camera pans left to reveal Goofy wearing fatigues, standing in front of a concrete cinder block wall, waving at the soldiers.
Well, how are y'all doing? Yes, now we've got Toon Power, a GI who doesn't get tired, doesn't get hungry, and who won't ever say die because he can't.
But would you trust Goofy with a gun?
Fuck no. He would kill everybody in his infantry.
Hey, you clearly look like Kingdom Hearts.
You're right, though. He would like...
I've never played Kingdom Hearts. It's weird for me to think of, like, Goofy as a badass.
Well, look, it was hard for us to think of Yoda as a badass, but fucking he hopped around the prequels like a little toy.
Yeah, so, and you know, that was stupid.
It sure was.
It's universally bad, and yeah. No one likes those movies.
Well, some people like
them. No, those aren't people.
Some people like them.
Nope, not people.
Some beings like them.
I guess. Right. The soldiers all raise their weapons and take aim at Goofy, whose eyes bulge out of his head.
Oh, no!
Goofy is blasted by an onslaught of firepower.
I wish they made this movie.
The explosions shaking the camera. After several seconds of blasting, the smoke clears to reveal Goofy standing there intact with nothing left of the wall save for the cutout of his shape directly behind him.
Ouch! That'd send most of us to bed with a headache. But not this private. Welcome aboard, Dogface.
We now see an enormous room in the basement of the Pentagon. We pan across a series of testing booths.
Meanwhile, at a research facility in this just-completed Pentagon, exhaustive tests are... I almost said tweets. Exhaustive.
Because, you know, the president tweets, of course. Why wouldn't I think...
That's how he announced his FBI director pick. What the fuck?
It's like a movie, but it's not, Sean.
In this just-completed Pentagon, exhaustive tests are conducted to make sure these tunes really have what it takes.
We see an endurance test booth where Chip and Dale are running inside... Were Chip and Dale around in 1941?
Yeah.
Oh. Where Chip and Dale are running inside a giant exercise wheel.
Maybe not.
I'll Google it.
Thanks, Kelly. Are running around inside a giant exercise wheel. Then an intelligence test booth where Pluto struggles to fit pegs into holes. Then an allergy test booth where Sneezy is sitting on a chair as a doctor in a white coat holds up various objects... which all make him sneeze, and finally a stress test booth where we find Donald Duck in a rage, screaming and sputtering at more doctors from... That's too loud. From inside a plastic cubicle.
Update 1943.
Yeah. Thanks, but you know, maybe they just weren't famous yet.
I mean,
another prototype was 1943.
The Coyote, Roadrunner, and Marvin Martian all appear in Roger Rabbit before they actually were in cartoons.
And look, Roger Rabbit was around before he was
clearly, yeah,
in the pictures, so we'll let it slide, I guess.
Just this once.
Whoa, take it easy, fella. They haven't even started yet.
We now, you know, that's the thing about Donald Duck, and I've always said this. Donald Duck is the character who's really only good for getting in a fight with a broom.
Or a hose.
Yeah. It's like he just like walks through his life and gets in fights with inanimate objects.
I do like the cartoon where he realizes his voice is just a disaster and he meets some duck that has a nice radio voice but looks just like him, and he pays him to go on a date with Daisy, and then the Daisy and that duck start dating, and then Donald just...
Oh, that reminds me of the one where you're boring me.
You hear that, everybody? Sean told me.
I did. We know.
That's what that silence means.
We
put
now
me in my place.
We now see. Hey, if there was an audience, they'd be like, "Oh snap! I need a hype man." Kelly, will you be my hype man?
No.
All you have to do is wear this clock around your neck.
We now see footage of a tune induction center where a line of some of our favorite tunes still wearing. I don't feel like naming them. Just picture your favorites, whatever. Yeah. Still wearing their civvies are saying goodbye to their girls. Mickey Mouse getting a kiss from Minnie. Porky Pig getting bussed by Petunia.
Bust. Okay, I've never heard
I guess she's taken away the dishes from the meals he's finished eating. Porky Pig getting bussed by Petunia, etc.
Tunes everywhere are getting the call from Uncle Sam. That's right, son. You're in the army now. Don't worry, girls. They'll be back.
And finally, a line of more tunes now wearing GI fatigues and carrying duffel bags, walking up the ramp of a troop ship.
But first, it's off to Europe, where our tune platoon gets ready to take on the Nazi juggernaut. You can bet they'll make those krauts sour.
I almost fucking chewed off my own tongue with that pun. Oh my god.
Donald Duck is the last one in line and turns and starts ranting at the camera as the group disappears into the ship.
Oh.
And don't forget to duck, Donald. Brana, brana, brana. Oh my god.
Table Reads will return after this brief word from our sponsors.
Here at the Prime Podcast, we're dedicated about broadcasting professionalism. Like, really dedicated.
Real quick, I know TJ's had to pee for quite a while. Do you need to take a break?
Dude, I'm good.
Are you sure? So you pissed in your mason jar, is that what you're saying?
Just keep going with the show. Don't you worry about where the bathroom breaks
are. I love your dedication.
Hey, whatever it takes for the sake of the show, man.
Listen more at theprimepod.com.
Ever since the hobbits threw the ring to that stupid volcano, I've needed a new one. I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon and I order my new processes. Go, go.
TableReadsPodcast.com.
Lights, camera, action.
So the movie's a kaput, which means your script ain't worth the buffalo shit on a nickel.
Now, back to Table Reads. Now part of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network.
Man, this is getting exciting.
Yeah.
I really like that that time jump with like 10 minutes of... They did newsreel footage.
They did what they did in Citizen Kane, but not to the effectiveness that Citizen Kane did it, because it was like put it right in the beginning where you don't know what's going on, and it's also telling you all this stuff, and it's effective.
Yeah, they jump straight from, yeah. Oh, hey, Pearl Harbor happened, and now we're in the thick of the war, and Goofy's fighting Nazis.
Yeah. But by the way, this just makes this more... I really wish they'd made this movie just for this newsreel alone.
Yeah,
I
it's pretty
loved.
Great. Kelly, how you liking this?
I'm still surprised it wasn't made. Like, I'm waiting for it to get, like, stupidly bad. Or
yeah,
offensive.
It could get bad at the end.
I don't know. We're almost halfway through at this point.
Yeah.
So there's probably going to be a 5-episode total script. But so far, it's staying good. It's going to have to work to get bad.
It's going to be more than 5. We're on our third one right now.
Yeah, well, we've done 2.5 so far. We have half of this one left. And we're about halfway through the script, so 2.5 and 2.5 is 5.
I bet it'll be at least 6.
Well, we'll see.
Place your bets.
Exterior. Artillery emplacement. Day. We're in Italy, at the front lines. A row of howitzer fire, each one creating a huge blast. Their crews reload as we pull back to reveal a valley beneath them. We can see shells exploding around German emplacements on the opposite ridge. You can tell they're German because they're very efficient.
Yeah.
Exterior, operations tent, day. We hear the sounds of shells exploding in the distance. The tent, which is the command center, is bustling with activity. A radio man near the tent is barking into a field phone.
Fox leader to Able Fox 5. Fox leader to Able Fox 5. We're going to be on the move here. Stand by for the word.
Colonel DeWitt, 50-ish and all business, barges out of the tent, followed by Lieutenant Mahaffey in his 30s. You, Colonel, I, Lieutenant?
Yeah, I thought I was the guy on the radio, but okay, yeah, fine.
Well, I mean, there's...
Okay, I'm sorry.
Three
go ahead.
Characters. What are we going
to
do?
Sorry. You want me to be Colonel? You want to be
Colonel? You be the Colonel, because he's older.
Okay. Then as soon as the 61st Division clears out that ridge, we send the 23rd and 35th Light Armor through the valley. If we get through the proposed... Oh, I'm sorry. What is that? Prosody?
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 Prosody. I like Prosody.
If we get through to Prosody, we can cut that Jerry supply line right down the middle.
Sir, the 61st has never seen action. You sure they can handle this?
You bet your butt they can, Lieutenant. I have total confidence in those boys.
Fox leader. What? Talk it up. You're not reading here.
Mark my words, son. That unit is going to change the face of the...
Colonel?
What?
You better get out to that ridge, Colonel.
Exterior ridge, valley, day. The artillery units continue to fire. A jeep pulls up. DeWitt and Mahaffey hop out and approach an artillery officer who's been looking out at the valley through binoculars.
This may not be working out, sir.
He points to the ridge. DeWitt steps up to it, looks out at the Prosody Valley.
This is some great war music.
Yeah. Where, in the distance, we see dozens of tiny figures darting about the open field in a ridiculously haphazard fashion.
Oh. Sorry, the music's just fucking...
No, this works now.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. They're supposed to be engaging the Krauts on the far ridge. What the hell are they doing?
I believe they're frolicking, sir.
DeWitt grabs the binoculars, looks through them. DeWitt's POV, through binoculars. Did a little redundant. Where we see the division of crazed tunes, including Daffy Duck, taunting the German artillery as shells explode all around him. You want to do Daffy or should I do Daffy?
Miss me! Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo!
A shell hits nearby.
Oh, so you want to play rough, huh?
He whips out a hand grenade, sticks it in his mouth, jerks it out and hurls it, only to realize that he's thrown the pin while the real grenade is still in his teeth.
Mother.
Well, he would have said it more like,
Mother.
Well, I mean, he's conflating two eras of Daffy Duck here anyway.
That's true. Yeah, he is putting... But no one else but us would know that, John.
Yosemite Literally Sam, no who runs by as Daffy explodes, waving his blazing six shooters over his head, shooting at everything and everybody.
I'm the rootness, tootness,
I was going to do it, but okay.
I wanted to do Sam.
Right, I guess I'll do Tasmanian Devil then.
I'm the rootness, tootness, outlaw, these schnitzel-stuffing polecats ever laid eyes on.
I think you're seeing now why Mel Blanc and Mo yes. LaMarche needed to be done at the end of the week.
The Tasmanian Devil, who we first see tearing around and nowhere near being invented as a creator.
Like another 10 years.
Yeah. who we first see tearing around as a cyclone, sucking in more German shells before they hit the ground. It stops spinning to reveal him clutching a handful of shells. He gobbles them all up, then rubs his stomach. Then he explodes, inflating to 20 times his size, then quickly returning to normal. Embarrassed, he daintily puts his hand over his mouth.
Pardon.
Back to scene. As DeWitt and Mahaffey watch them, nonplussed. My God, they're Looney Tunes.
They didn't do this in training, goddammit.
They don't seem to want to hurt anybody for real, sir.
Oh, that's just great. Okay, let's scrub this. Get me Colonel Trumbull on the horn. And get rid of... Huh?
Walks back to Jeep.
And get rid of those freaks!
Exterior trench, day. The left flank. We hear artillery and machine gun fire. We pan across a line of young GIs. crouched in the trench. Hey, Kelly, why don't you just be a GI?
Okay.
Yeah. Just one.
Come on, GI Jane.
Hey, yeah. We still hated women at this point.
Yeah. Well, not... Yeah, but come on, you're a...
You just put on your manliest voice and be first GI.
Okay. We supposed to sit here all day?
All right, Rosie the Riveter. Way to be...
I don't know.
Way to be feminine.
I don't know. Sarge says we're waiting for new orders.
I wish I could stand up and get some sleep.
Sergeant Dungan, a burly guy about 40, hops into the trench.
This is great music. We just got word from Fox Leader. We're moving out.
Into the valley, Sarge?
That's right, Private Boop. No, the 61st screwed up Royal. Now we gotta swing north and take that hill.
Hill?
Wait, off screen?
Private Richie Davenport pokes his head up from the end of the trench. What hill? The sergeant points, and Richie reacts to Mount Alba.
Jessica,
Mount Jessica Alba.
I was
going to
say he's going to fuck Jessica Alba.
Fuck Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah, right.
A towering snow-capped peak in the distance. But I was told we were going to take the valley. We always take the valleys.
The Jerrys are swarming all over it, kid. They got 6 battalions and over 100 cannons.
I don't mind. Look, I just think that once you've decided on a plan of action, you should...
Baker Company, Charlie Company, let's move out!
The soldiers leap out of the trench and start running. Richie grabs his rifle, cusses to himself, and follows them. Exterior, mountain trail, day. You know, you can just leave the actor decide what the cuss is going to be.
Yeah.
Those fucking cunt bags! Exterior, mountain trail, day.
That's what the original Roger Rabbit missed. They needed more of the word cunt bags.
Yeah. And just what was she doing with her hands all over you? I don't know. She's a fucking cunt.
She's a cunt bag, you know.
Exterior, mountain trail, day. A thin path winds its way along the steep face of the mountain. Sorry, the music got to me.
It works, man.
We continue to hear artillery fire. A moment, then a GI comes into frame. His back against the granite wall, sidestepping his way up the pass. He is followed by 2 more GIs, then the sergeant, with their backs against the wall. Next comes Richie. Only his face is against the wall. Exterior, footbridge, day. Rickety and fragile. It hangs over a ravine, several hundred feet below. Richie's company arrives at the far end. Richie takes 1 look at it and freezes.
Okay, girls, 1 at a time. Let's go, let's go!
Across this thing? It looks like it's strung up with spaghetti.
Suddenly we hear machine gun fire. A few bullets ricochet nearby and they dive for cover.
Do they have lasers in World
War I? Yeah.
You got a line, Trevor. Stop playing with the sounds.
Does that answer your question? Move it!
Dungan jumps on the bridge as a few of the soldiers return fire with their M16s. They quickly move across. Richie closes his eyes and moves with them, only he crawls so slowly that the entire company passes him by. Also, they would have been using Thompson submachine guns in World War II, not M16s, which didn't really come about until Vietnam.
Yes, the Thompson family fame fortune is based on that. Sooner all on the other side.
They quickly move across. Richie closes his eyes and moves with them, only he crawls so slowly that the entire company passes him by. Sooner all on the other side. The sergeant turns and reacts. Richie is only a third of the way across, frozen. The machine gun fire intensifies.
Davenport!
Present, sir!
What the hell are you doing?
It's okay, sir! Go on without me! I'll be fine!
Just get your ass over here!
I can't! Kelly.
Sarge, they're all over us!
Epstein, let's get back! Let's get him! God damn it.
Sarge back across the bridge. The 2 soldiers move back across the bridge as the other GIs crouch low, trapped there, trying to return fire. Exterior, dirt road, day. As a line of troops trudge along on their way to...
Prosetti.
Prosetti. Richie's unit has biovacked near the side of the road. relaxing and trying to cook a hot meal. Richie has just finished packing up his gear. The first GI steps up to him. We hear the song I'll Be Seeing You on a background radio.
Hey, cheer up. I'd sell my sister to get out of here.
Yeah. See ya. Richie starts walking, passes the rest of his unit, most of whom choose to ignore him. He arrives at the side of a road... Okay, yeah, that wasn't me fucking up. At the side of a road as a caravan of covered supply trucks passes. Sergeant Dungan flags one of them down. The driver is Corporal Chapin, 30-ish.
You headed south? This guy needs a lift. That's you, Kelly.
What?
Chapin, that's you.
All right.
You clearly have a Chapin kind of thing.
I'm clearly a corporal.
Yeah. Say it again, I'm sorry.
Hop in, buddy.
Richie hesitates, turns to Dungan. Sarge, I swear, I wasn't scared of the...
Forget it, kid.
Richie gets into the truck. We follow Dungan. Dungan is a weird name. It sounds like
it
he's a
Dungan. Dungan. It should be Dungan. Let's just change it to Dungan.
I mean, if his name is Dungan, I think you should read him as a Gungan.
Yeah. Dungan the Gungan.
Misa no like Nazis.
Misa no like my name.
We follow Dungan as he walks back to his company, heating up their K rations over a makeshift fire. A few are listening, somewhat amused, to the portable radio, sitting next to their field phone. The sergeant passes.
Hey, can that Nazi crap.
But Sarge, it's the only... No, he was like from Brooklyn. But Sarge, it's the only station we get.
Points to radio.
And that sexy broad's coming on.
Try not to let her wash what's left of your brain, Drabinski.
The Sarge...
Drabinski is one of those last names of a douchebag that you just have to say. It's always like a ski. It's always some kind of like, you know, good one, Kowalski. You know?
The Sarge crosses away as a few guys chuckle at Drabinski. The song finishes and we hear a familiar, sultry voice.
Fucking Drabinski.
That was I'll Be Seeing You going out to all you cute guys in the 9th Regiment. This is Axis Annie, hoping you'll be seeing your loved ones back home very soon. After all, isn't home where you'd rather be right now?
No.
Interior not supply truck day moving. Richie sits next to Chapin. Which should be Chaplin. In my head, every time it's Chaplin, I know. And I have to like cut out
Dungan
that L.
And Chaplin. That's what their names should be.
As the truck bumps along the dirt road, he's just looking out the window, depressed.
So, what happened? You get wounded or something?
Yeah, or something. They're shipping me to some supply depot outside Naples.
You gonna do the same place as the Fruitcake Brigade?
They're shipping all the gays out, too?
Yep.
The Fruitcake Brigade?
Yeah, I guess they figure if they can't fight, they can scrub toilets and peel potatoes. That's who we got in all these trucks.
Huh? Suddenly, the truck ahead of them hits a large shell crater in the road. It bounces off the ground and explodes one of its occupants through the camouflage tarp in the back. Corporal Chapin hits the brakes, but it's too late. We hear a thud. The two men react as we see... Roger Rabbit, who is now, once again, plastered across the entire windshield.
Yeah! That was Schultz, not Roger.
Yeah, who the fuck is Schultz? Where did Schultz come from?
Schultz!
Like, there's no Schultz here.
The guy who created Peanuts is driving the van.
I think that's supposed to be Chapin.
Yeah, Chapin Schultz. I don't know.
Richie!
Exterior supply truck day. Long shot. As the truck rolls along in the middle of the caravan, we see Roger still draped on the hood and hear Richie, his voice, trailing off into the distance.
Damn it! Damn it! God damn it! Damn it!
Exterior, Naples Supply Base, day. A supply center servicing the thousands of troops on the front lines, now 50 miles away. A sign at the front gate reads, 5th Army Supply Depot. We see a couple of C-47 cargo planes on final approach as the caravan of trucks moves toward the front gate. and hear a truckload of tunes singing.
We all have to do this one together. Yeah. This is multiple.
68 bottles of beer on the wall. 68 bottles of beer. If one of those bottles should happen to fall.
Interior supply truck day moving. Roger sits in between Richie and Chapin, wearing ill-fitting fatigues and a helmet, which flattens his ears against his back. Richie looks out the window, trying very hard not to listen.
You know, Sean, me and you don't sing together anymore. It's sad.
Anyway, I tried to jump up right away.
Join up.
Join up even. But hey, I can't read. I have cataracts.
All right, where are we?
Rabbit axe.
Anyway, I tried to join up right away, but they wouldn't take me, so I starred in a few movies. You should try it sometime. It's fun.
We see Richie trying to restrain himself.
Provided you're not a Negro.
Exterior supply truck day drive-by. The Negro line is not in the script, just to be clear. Yeah.
But it does. It is appropriate, though.
As it moves through to the... Were there any black people in that movie?
Yeah. Remember the guy without the arm? When he wipes the dip?
Oh, the guy
in the janitor in the terminal bar.
He just got laid off from the red car.
He was
also passed out on the table.
No. He's the guy who told him about the guy on the table, because that guy was passed out in his beer, and he goes,
"Oh, that's right.
What's with Earl? New outfit bought the red car. Some new company called Cloverleaf.
Cutbacks, they say.
Yeah, put the poor guy on 2 weeks' notice."
So that's it. That's
yeah. That's the one black character in Roger Rabbit. But to be fair, he wasn't. Him being black had nothing to do with his character. So it was justified. It wasn't like, hey, look, we're putting a black in, everybody.
Well, yeah, but it was still like a black. Hey, there were no black people in Los Angeles in 1947, yeah. Right?
They were, but they had their own bar. The Ink and Paint Club. Only it was just called the Ink Club because even the owners were racist.
Oh, yeah. And Donald Duck did call Daffy the N-word, didn't he?
He actually says doggone stubborn little, but yeah, it does sound like...
That's all I can hear.
It does sound like it. It does sound like he says the N-word. Doggone stubborn
little. Yeah, that's what I heard. I watched it last week, and yeah. I was like...
Yeah, it really does sound like it. It does sound like it.
And Daffy gets the most off model, I think.
No.
With the hair and the... Anyway.
No.
Moving on.
Yeah, this is getting real in.
Richie trying to restrain himself. Supply truck day drive by. As it moves through the gate and away from us, we continue to hear Roger droning on.
Where are we? Oh, but then I got drafted. Is that right? Okay.
But then I got... Oh, this is off screen. I'm sorry.
And it's we.
Oh. But then we got drafted. At long last, I got a chance to do my duty. Damn my torpedoes. Hoist my...
Petard?
Petard? What's a petard?
I don't know.
Kelly, what's a petard?
I don't know if I want to Google that.
See, I don't want that in my history.
Exterior barracks area, day. The barrack buildings are Spartan, made out of corrugated tin. Corporal Dewey... Oh, is it that...
Sorry.
Corporal Dewey, about 20, stands at the back of the supply truck as several tunes hop out over the tailgate, one by one. He's reading last
Apparently
names...
Apparently it's a small bomb.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah.
You hoist them. It's a hoistable bomb.
It's a hoistable bomb, and how do you pronounce it? Is it petard or petard or...
Well, apparently it's a phrase from Shakespeare, when you hoist your own petard, to be harmed by one's own plan to harm someone else, or to fall in your own trap.
Oh, that makes that line really funny.
Yeah.
Tunes hop out over the tailgate one by one. He's reading last names from a list on a clipboard. Woodpecker, W, Mouse, M, Pig, P, you're in barracks 6. Feline, B. B, feline?
I don't know.
Rabbit, R. Turtle, S. Davenport, R. Barracks 7. Richie crosses over as Dewey continues. Moose, B. Dwarf, S. Dwarf, G. Bowling Dwarf, D. Hey, buddy, I'm not bunking with these things. I'll bet you're Davenport. That's what this says, so that's what you do. Yeah, well, who the hell's in charge here?
Why is he Marty McFly all of a sudden?
He always was.
Oh, okay. You're really doing up the Marty boys, though. Like recently, you kicked it up a notch.
Hands him the clipboard. You are. Off his look. Here are the assignments. Have fun, General. He chuckles a bit and walks away as Richie sighs, looks down at the clipboard, and takes over. Okay, Dwarf G, Dwarf B, Hound A. Oh, screw it. Everybody just get out of the damn truck. I'll post your barracks over here. Richie walks over and hangs the clipboard on a nail on the front of the barracks, and we see the tail of a small plane gingerly backing out over the tailgate of the truck. Then the right wing, then the left. Presently, Pee-wee, a polite and extremely timid toon biplane, gets off and walks over to him. Kelly, you should be Pee-wee.
Excuse me? Where do I sleep?
I don't know. You're a plane. You stay outside.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Wait. Why is it suddenly back to Corporal Dewey? I think it's supposed to be Richie. I'm not a sir. What are you doing riding on the truck?
I'm afraid to fly.
The plane walks away on its wheels as Richie just shakes his head, quite believing his fate.
That's funny.
Interior barracks, day. A cramped room.
No, it's possessive. It belongs to the president, the former president. It's Barack's.
Oh, yeah. A cramped room with four cots and a single bulb hanging from the ceiling. Swifty Turtle, one of the bunkmates, is methodically making up his bed. Swifty is...
Swifty Turtle?
I've never heard of Swifty Turtle.
It's probably some fucking shitty, silly symphonies character.
Yeah, maybe it's the turtle from... maybe it's supposed to be the turtle from...
No, that's Cecil.
Cecil, yeah, be turtle.
Swifty is pleasant, but a bit slow on the uptake, with the voice and demeanor reminiscent of... Oh, maybe he's new. With a voice and demeanor reminiscent of Mortimer Snerd. That's very helpful. Thank you for that reference. Richie is unloading his gear on his bunk as Roger walks around him, excited.
Isn't this the bee's knees, Roomie? Just like old times.
Nothing from Richie.
I've left your pillow just the way you like it. I would have warmed up your milk, but it isn't bedtime yet, and even if it was, I don't have any milk, but if I did, I'd...
Just be quiet, okay, Roger?
Why so glum, chum? We got some swell bunkmates. There's this real hep cat named Blackie, and that Swifty over there...
It's, nice to meet you, Richie.
Swifty! Show them all the swell stuff you got under your shell.
Oh, nope. Not gonna do it. Nope.
Okay, so he's Beaky Buzzard, but yeah. He's a turtle.
Wait, you gotta do the pause and then the last nope, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nope. Not gonna do it. Nope.
Nope.
Come on, it'll be fun.
I don't care about his goddamn shell. I don't care if he's got a floating crap game in there.
But, Richie...
Roger, I think perhaps maybe Richie would like to be...
Left alone is what you mean. Not bugged, unmolested, left to his own devices. He's picking up Roger's... Yeah. Richie storms out as Roger reacts and Swifty continues...
Considers.
Mm-hmm.
We're in overtime now, by the way. We got hour and three. Oh, whatever you say, buddy.
Well, nope. That's not it.
Nope.
Exterior barracks day. Richie exits, slamming the screen door. Corporal Dewey and a couple of other GIs are passing in front of the barracks.
Oh, is that me? I'm sorry.
I think
you're him.
No, you were Corporal Dewey.
Hey, Napoleon Nutcake. As soon as you get your freaks unpacked, we got about 6 tons of Idaho spuds to peel.
Richie glares at Dewey, who chuckles and keeps walking.
Blackie Cat? Who's Blackie Cat?
Kelly.
It's a boy.
Is it?
That's never stopped you before.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong.
Can you do a pronounced Brooklyn accent?
Yeah, there you go.
Not under pressure.
Yeah, how do you say psst with a Brooklyn accent?
Richie turns. Blackie Cat, a roguish Brooklyn tune feline, leans against the wall of the barracks, chewing on a toothpick. Blackie speaks with a pronounced Brooklyn accent.
My cod.
He hands Richie a business card which reads, Blackie F. Cat. paths crossed, 50 simoleons. What about it? Richie looks up. Blackie is gone. He turns to see Dewey walking toward the base PX. After a beat, Blackie emerges from behind another barracks and blithely skips in front of Dewey, crossing his path. Instantly, hundreds of raw potatoes come showering into frame from out of nowhere, creaming Dewey on the head and burying him up to his shoulders. Dewey looks up, totally confused. Richie reacts to this. Blackie casually strolls by.
Yeah. Whoever fucking wrote this, I forget who we said who it was, but they clearly know cartoons. That is, this is so fucking well written, man. I want to shit on it, but we can't.
Just said the day ain't a total loss.
Exterior, supply base, day, various. We see the Toon Platoon.
Finally, hey, the namesake. Finally get to our,
yeah. We see the Toon Platoon engaged in a number of menial chores. A Toon runs another Toon up a flagpole so he can polish the top as Richie, standing at the bottom, makes a check on his clipboard. Several Toons, including Pee-wee the Plane, are washing grime off, a real one, using Dumbo to hose it down. The Tasmanian Devil has a paintbrush in each hand. He dips them in two cans of green and yellow paint. A tank drives up and the Tasmanian Devil turns into a cyclone, moving all over the tank and then pulling away to reveal it freshly camouflaged.
Yeah, we get it. It's the Tasmanian Devil. It's the scene from Space Jam. Okay, fuck you.
Two soldiers. So this was written before Space Jam.
Was it really?
Yeah, okay, this was written like immediately maybe that's after where that's, Roger Rabbit.
Maybe that's where the scene comes from because I don't. That is a very Tasmanian Devil thing to do, and I can't in good conscience think that the writers of Space Jam knew what they were doing at any point, at any time ever. So they probably didn't steal it. They probably stole it from this. Fuck them.
We are getting...
We're getting on.
To the end here. Okay, so let's read up to this point right here.
Okay.
All right. So...
Wait. Okay. Gotcha.
Tasmanian Devil camouflage. Okay, two soldiers stand in a field as a few Toons, dangling from parachutes, land around them. A moment, then a Toon splats face down on the ground in front of them, an unopened parachute still on its back. One of the soldiers stamps dud on the unopened chute. Exterior, barracks area, day. Richie stands outside of the base PX with a canvas sack. A number of excited Toons are crowded around him as he takes letters from the sack, reads the names on the envelope. Coyote! Hound! Le Pew! Richie continues calling names, handing out letters. Exterior, barracks area, day. A few minutes later, Roger is the only one left in front of Richie, who holds up one more letter. Roger looks hopeful. Gonzalez! Speedy Gonzalez races into frame, snatches the letter, and zips out of frame as Richie folds up the sack.
12 years again before he's ever done a cartoon.
Sorry, that's it. Roger is crestfallen. A tear wells up in his eye as he slowly trudges away. Richie sighs, catches up, and they walk together.
Not only do I not have a mother not to write to me, I don't even have a true love not to write to me.
If it makes you feel any better, I didn't get one either.
It's time to wake up and smell the carrot juice. She's gone, Richie. She threw me over that day.
Over?
Yeah, that's a phrase.
Okay.
That was a phrase.
Okay.
She threw me over that day and shipped out to Shangri-La with that big shot boss of hers. She's sitting under the apple tree with someone else but me.
Come on, Roger. Look, maybe Jessica's been busy. Maybe she doesn't have time to write.
You really think so?
Sure. I mean, I bet she's working all day in a factory someplace. Helping with the war effort.
Fade out.
All right.
Well, Kelly, we're going to start our next episode with some Jessica. I can see that right here. So,
ooh.
So you won't be sitting around bored waiting for your lines. You'll probably like have some lines and then get bored. So that'll be a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need more Kelly. We need a...
I said no one ever.
Well.
No, people really...
People actually...
do love you.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom.
I'm personally starting a campaign to replace Sean with you and me. So just like, you know, we lose me and Sean, we gain you.
It's a very quiet, very boring...
Three Kellys.
Three Kellys. There you go. That would be a great way to go.
So I want to remind everybody to check out the Rogue Intel shows, and to you know, when you go to buy stuff from Amazon, instead of going straight to Amazon, go to rogueintel.com/Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
That way we get a little kickback from your purchases. It doesn't cost you a penny. You still get all your same great deals. I just bought a treadmill.
It's a great way to contribute
at rogueintel.com/Amazon.
It's a great way to contribute to this, your 58th favorite podcast.
Yes. Man.
Could I have picked a harder number to say?
It's an optimistic number.
It is. But it's very still difficult. Optimistic. 58th.
And 58th. Kelly has changed her Instagram username.
Ah, Kelly.
To something easier.
You've been stalking.
What?
Yes. I needed something that would not trace me back to my LinkedIn. There's some weirdos out there.
Oh, sorry. I want to apologize.
Also, Kelly
for that.
Still uses
just
LinkedIn.
Step all over my joke. All right.
Sorry.
My mom is a recruiter, so it is beaten into me. Yes.
A recruiter for LinkedIn?
For Abraham Lincoln specifically.
Abraham Lincoln. that's their mascot.
Kelly, what's your new Instagram?
It is X and then Kira, K-I-R-A, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y.
X Kira Kelly.
K-E-L-L-Y.
And mm-hmm. I can tell you that there are some cool new pictures of her as Dark Phoenix. Because we went
Thank
to
you,
MomoCon
yeah.
recently and she had an awesome suit. She
Thanks.
Could not text
yeah,
anybody because her gloves did not come off.
Yeah, it was awful. But kind of like, you know, freeing.
Well, that's cool. And Kelly, you make all your own costumes, right?
No, that one I didn't. So I'm going to be debuting it this, not this weekend, but the next weekend with 7-foot wings. So I'll have made the wings, but I commissioned the suit from a fantastic designer out in California.
Well, all right.
All right, all right, all right.
Trevor would like you, since we're doing Roger Rabbit, I think that it's really important to tell people that Trevor is in his persona as the Looney Tunes critic, posting every Saturday morning.
That's right.
A Looney Tunes commentary.
A Looney Tunes critic commentary. And sometimes I'm joined by you, Sean.
Yes.
And it's actually a lot of fun. And people are really demanding it. I mean, like, I've had people say, you guys need to do this more than just once a week. And I was like, that's nice, but no.
Well,
keep them wanting more.
Fuck you greatly, Mr. Internet Stranger.
Well, no, because they want more. That's what it is. They like what we do.
Yeah. But man, like, how much time do people have?
Yeah, well, you know, people are into binging. So if they see one thing they like it more if there's 20 more things of that thing that they can watch right after it.
I guess it doesn't take us a long time to do them.
No, they're 6-7 minutes a piece, you know.
And there are 2,000 cartoons we can do.
Yeah, yeah. Because somebody was we had a few requests, and I was just like, well, look, if we don't get it to it, you know, within the next few months, just hang around, man. We got.
It's gonna
one.
Get to the point where it gets ungainly, and yeah, we're like, we don't remember which ones we've done
right.
because we're not doing them in any order.
No.
Or like we're just like, which ones are good?
That's what I said to you today. I was like, pick 8.
Yeah.
Any 8. Which one do you want to do?
They were good 8, though.
They were.
All right.
The ones we do at the end, when we start doing shitty cartoons, that's when you know we're at the end of the...
We'll end up doing the Night Watchman, which is a real fucking shitty cartoon.
We'll start doing the Cool Cat cartoons.
But it's like this is Chuck Jones's first cartoon, and we have nothing more to say about it.
It's well animated, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's worthy of some of Disney's best animation, but that's about it.
So, why don't we skedaddle?
Let's get out of here.
And we'll see everybody next
week.
I don't know.
Kelly, hang out for a second, okay? Don't go anywhere. All right, fine.
The voice of Table Reads is Art Carlson. Hey, that's kind of meta. Meta. This podcast was created by Sean McBee and produced by Ferris Wheelhouse.
FerrisWheelhouse.net.
Fuck.
Cut to black.